Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
This is Jaguars Thursday from the HananiahAutos.com studio. After the Gus Bradley Radio Hour on Thursday evening, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli is on assignment with a high school football team tonight locally. They're busy playing a game tonight, so just me and Logs tonight. I got to correct you from the Gus Bradley show,
though. What did
Logs.
I get wrong?
It's no longer 1AA.
What
it's
is it?
It's called the Football Championship Subdivision, FCS.
Okay.
Because Division One is now FBS, Football Bowl Subdivision.
Okay.
It's been a few years. It's okay.
He was telling me it was 1AA.
Well,
I was just going off of his lead.
When he was there, yeah, sure.
Okay, so it's changed since he was there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you know, that was pretty cool, though. I mean, because he was getting fired up about North Dakota State now.
No doubt about it. Oh, those Bison guys are different.
He was getting more fired up talking about me wearing pantyhose at that Buffalo game back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And then criticizing me for not being tough enough to tough it out. All I know is that was a cold game in Buffalo Bills history.
To a guy from southern Minnesota there, and he can handle the cold weather. Lots to get to tonight. We'll get to the Jags-Bengals matchup this Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium. Can Blake Bortles get back on track? Can the defense keep up the good run and maybe get some turnovers this week? Maybe some changes at linebacker again? Oh, yeah, it's a big trip coming up, too. Start of a 10-day trip on Saturday, the game Sunday in Cincinnati, and straight over to London for the entire week of preparation for, 2 weeks from now, the game at Wembley Stadium against the Cowboys. So a big trip coming up. Let's start with the quarterback, though.
I thought we were going to start with talking about the pubs that we're going to go to while we're over there.
We've got a whole hour.
Did you find some kind of places like Hay in the Barn or something like that?
We found a few of those up northwest side of London there out in the country. Chandler's Cross is the name of the town where the first hotel will be, the Grove. The team will be there from Monday morning when the team arrives from Cincinnati all the way through Friday midday and then move into town.
I am very appreciative that you were able to keep your focus after that.
Hey, it's all right.
With Joe Fortunato acting totally unprofessional over there when we were talking about some of the pubs. Now, I'm looking forward to the trip.
Yes.
For one reason, is that this year they're staying at a different place.
Yes.
All of the operations will be in one place, although the team was at one place last year. Some of the support people will be there as well, which is good for me and you and the other staff. And you know, the second time that you go somewhere, I think the first time when you go somewhere, you're trying to figure out exactly what it is that you want to do and what it is that you want to see. And I don't want to say you're nervous about doing anything, but you're not sure. You know,
because you're not sure the schedule and how far out of the cocoon you can go and get back, and you know, yeah.
And so year two, I think the players that go back, I think that this is an advantage for the Jaguars somewhat, you know, for going over there because they did it. Now there's a lot of different players on the team. I understand that, but at least you get a little bit of guidance from the players that have been there before. Now you're facing
not much of the team's been there before, Jeff.
No, but you know the guys that have been there.
Yeah.
You know, can relate the experience of being there last year and help provide that guidance. And that's a good thing. And on top of that, your coaching staff has been there. Your support staff has been there. And I think that they make that an easier process because, you know, I mean, we're talking about this now because, you know, the football team, the staff, the players, and all the logistical things have had to be taken care of long ago. And so this team has definitely had a jump start on all of that.
No doubt about that. And, I mean, you know, this is a different setup this year because the team's on the road before the trip. Last year they were home the week before and then came back on Monday instead of Sunday after the game. So a little different scheduling this year. And I think what we heard before, that's what they preferred as a road game before, just to be out on the road, be out there anyway, and then go straight over. But either way, that's what the schedule is. And there is another football game before this team gets to London, too. You got to remember
There's no doubt. And it's a good football team in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You know, Do I think that they're as good as people thought after the first, 3 weeks of the season when they were 3-0 and everybody was like, wow, the Bengals might be the best team in the AFC? No. I don't think that they're a okay football team, good football team. They play in an extremely tough division. And I think that seasons them a little bit, and that they're a little bit more accustomed to playing tight games. But they're not a great football team by any means.
And they've been banged up a little bit too. A.J. Green's been out for a little while with his issues.
Well, the biggest question with the Cincinnati Bengals is that last year they had like the number 3 ranked defense in the National Football League. And I'm talking they could play some defense. Now, Marvin Lewis is a defensive-minded coach. He took that job basically from the Baltimore Ravens, where he was so successful with them as their defensive coordinator. So he brought a style of defense with him to Cincinnati that was fantastic. And they've always been known for playing good defense in Cincinnati. They've been struggling to really kind of find their way offensively once they got A.J. Green and Andy Dalton. That's kind of been their way. But for some reason, they went from the number 3 ranked defense last year in Cincinnati to this year they're ranked number 30. How does that happen?
I mean, what do they lose? They didn't lose anybody, did they?
Well,
who did they lose from last year? How do you fall that far that fast?
I think the biggest problem for them has been the play of their front seven. Because the back end, I think, is better than ever. Even though I'm saying that what happened to that defense, the back end of that defense, which is all the number one picks that they have in the secondary, which is, Terrence Newman and Dre Kirkpatrick, two very, very good mm-hmm. players. And Kirkpatrick was a first-round pick out of Roll Tide, Alabama.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Reggie Nelson, first-round pick from here. Leon Hall was an 07 first-round pick for the Bengals. And then the current first-round pick, Darquise, I guess it is.
Yeah, Denard.
Dennard.
Yep.
Dennard, their first-round pick this
Michigan
year.
Michigan State guy, right?
That's right, Michigan State. And then Adam Jones, a first-round pick for the Titans. I mean, so you got all those first-round picks. The back end is playing well because if you look at a couple numbers, the Cincinnati Bengals are number one in opponent passer rating. So, in other words, every quarterback that you play, what's his combined rating? Well, the combined rating against the Cincinnati Bengals defense is a 73.0. If you're a starting quarterback in the National Football League, you're not going to be a starter for much longer with a 73.0. Okay, unless you're a young quarterback like Blake Bortles, who has a 68.3.
I'm about to say.
Okay, that's part of the process.
That's right.
And the other thing is they're number 2 in the National Football League in completion percentage allowed at just under 58%. Their issue, though, has been their front is not the same as what they have been in years past. They've got a defensive tackle, 3 technique, Geno Atkins, who is coming back from an ACL reconstruction. He's not even 1 year completely removed from his reconstructive surgery. He's still finding his way. The end position is off for the Bengals. They have probably one of the most talented defensive ends in all of football that does not play all the time hard. I mean, there's some guys in the National Football League that are fantastic players that will take an occasional playoff. And if they're great players, they can get away with it. But Carlos Dunlap takes off, like it appears to be, like 50% of the plays to where he doesn't go hard. If this guy, who is fifth year out of Florida, and he had a big question mark, Florida, mm-hmm. I think he fell asleep in a car somewhere mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm. If he had a motor, he might be the best defensive end in the National Football League because when he turns it on, his on is at a high level.
It sounds like if that front was any better, they would make that secondary even better than they are already.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. If you have to rely on that type of secondary to do all that, then you need some help up front.
Well, here's the thing. They have a very good nose tackle who is consistent, and that's Domata Peko. Okay, and you can't miss him. He's got hair flowing out of his helmet real long, right? Mm-hmm. And he's got the biggest rear end in football. He's got the biggest butt that there is in football. I'm dead serious. And I'm not saying that to be funny. I mean, he's got a big rear end.
A big guy.
And
strong
he can
guy.
Play football.
Yeah.
He's hard to move, and he's athletic, and he can move. He's playing at a high level. But the rest of the defense is a big notch off from where they were playing at last year.
Peko was on the injury report today. Well, yesterday did not practice with a toe injury, limited today, so was back on the field. It looks like that's a move forward for him. So a few guys like that for Cincinnati. For Bortles, you know, facing this group, another challenge with that secondary. Like you said, all that talent on the back end. But
here's the thing that's crazy.
Yeah. What's that?
They have more interceptions, okay, as a defense than touchdowns allowed. Passing.
That's pretty good.
Okay. They have 9 interceptions.
I would say that's pretty good.
That's really good. 9 interceptions, yeah. And they've only allowed 8 on the season.
Hmm.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And that's – is that a good or a bad sign for what Blake has done?
Well, it makes you nervous, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
He just had 2 pick sixes here against the Miami Dolphins and a fumble. And now he's going to Cincinnati to play against 6 first-round draft pick guys in the secondary on the road. Okay, at their place, he's going against that group. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great challenge.
It's Halloween weekend, too.
I think it's a great challenge. You know, and I'm glad for that challenge for Blake Bortles, because in order for him to get better, he needs to see that, and he needs to go against guys like that.
That's what it's going to happen every week in the league. There's going to be some type like that you're going to face.
I don't know if I ever remember a secondary that has 6 first-round draft picks in it. I just don't remember that. And then their other safety, George Iloka, is a draft pick for the Bengals and a relatively high draft pick for them. I mean, you're talking about a back end that they – and first of all, that the Bengals have spent 1, 2, and 3. 3 of those picks are their own, okay? 3 of those high picks are their own, which is incredible.
Wow. Keeping them around.
You think they believe in corners?
I hope so, because they got a lot of them, it sounds like. Good challenge for Bortles this week. A little bit of good news on the offensive line for the Jaguars, too, against that front. Luke Jokel was on the practice field today. Did not practice yesterday. Was non-contact today. He'll go full tomorrow is the word. And if he clears that and clears the aftermath of that, then he could be eligible to play on Sunday, which is a quick turnaround.
Well, I hope he does play. I mean, just like you want to see Blake Bortles bounce back and play against a real good secondary in the Cincinnati Bengals, you want your left tackle to continue to make the progress that he's been making, because he clearly got better in the Cleveland Browns game. He got better, a big step up, I thought, in that game, because I thought he run blocked very well. His pass protection was a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could see that he's been making steps each and every week. And you wanted him to take another step up against the Miami Dolphins, and I'm disappointed that he got hurt in that game, because that was a matchup that I was really looking forward to watching, because the Miami Dolphins had to have 2 very good defensive ends. And Olivier Vernon, big, powerful guy. Luke had kind of been struggling. If you could say that he's been struggling with anything, it's with the power rush.
Mm-hmm.
And Olivier Vernon was a guy who liked the power rush and was very good at it. And you wanted to see Luke against him, because that's why you want to have a third overall or second overall pick in the draft, is to see him get better and see him match up against that type of a player, because he's a really good football player. I'm disappointed that he got hurt early on, not in him, but just that we couldn't see that matchup mm-hmm. for more than we did.
Well, there'll be other matchups similar to that, I guess, later in the year. Not
It'd
quite like that.
It'd be hard to get that kind of a matchup, because Olivier Vernon is a very special pass rusher, in that he brings a physical element, and there's not a lot of guys like him in the National Football League.
Join head coach Gus Bradley at the 5th Annual McKenzie's Run, November 22nd. A 5K run and walk, plus a 1-mile fun run, starts and finishes inside EverBank Field. Benefits the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help youth recognize their full potential. To register your team, go to McKenziesRun.org. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll look at the Jaguars' defense, Cincinnati offense, what pieces are back for the Bengals, what pieces might be out this week, too. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
A ticket to a Jags game is more than just a seat. The newly created field seats on the east sideline behind the visiting team benches feature all-inclusive food and beverage and free premium parking. Visit jaguars.com/more or call 904-633-2000. Jags Giants. It's a month away from tonight. How about that?
Yeah,
November 30th.
Tom Coughlin back in the house. It's always good to see him.
Sure, and it's been a heck of a year for those guys in New York, too. Oh, my goodness.
Been a tough year.
And we'll see. You know, they always, when they have tough years early, they tend to turn it on late, it seems.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a coach in the National Football League that's better, you know, down the stretch with a team and kind of getting it refocused. And, you know, my first experience with that was back in 1996 when we were almost buried.
No doubt.
And we were able to turn it around, and he did a great job of coaching, and we had a lot of fun in that 1996 year. And I know a lot of fans remember those days of 1996 and looked upon it as just so much fun. And Coughlin was a big reason for that. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I haven't seen him since last year.
That's the old line, right? What's the old line? Winning doesn't suck. Isn't that the old line, Logs?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who told me that. It was one of the coach on the – I don't think it was Mike Tice, but it might have been, because that sounds like it would be coming from Mike Tice. And getting on the elevator, and I was telling all the coaches, congratulations, you know, as they're coming down from the coaching booth, and I'm coming down from the broadcast booth to go to the locker room to interview the coaches and the players. And one of the coaches, I said, hey, congratulations. He says, man, he said, you know, the one thing you can always say, I'm like, what? And he goes, winning never sucks.
That's right.
And that's exactly
right.
That's
a true statement. Jaguars Thursday continues. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman. No Tony Boselli tonight. He's out of here tonight. He'll join us again. Our next, weekly show on Jaguars Radio will be Monday night, Jaguars Monday, from the Grove Resort in Chandler's Cross, Hertfordshire County in England, northwest of London.
Yeah, you have no idea where that is. I have no idea. Yeah.
And that'll be Jaguars Monday. You'll jump on with us that night. Logs,
I will be. I will be on with you guys.
We'll be live from the team hotel there. Jaguars defense. They're trying to make it five straight now. They really had four outings in a row of, I guess you could call it, winning defense. I mean, if the offense does anything, right?
You want to talk about winning defense?
Yeah.
If you looked at the last four games that this defense has played, they've allowed an average yards per game of 313.5.
Okay.
If you took that number and placed it in the rankings in the National Football League that are currently out now after eight weeks of the football season, they would be the fourth-ranked defense in the National Football League. Now, look, I know that's just the last 4 weeks, and, you know, you're pulling – it's kind of like numbers. The last 2 weeks, the Jaguars have been number one in the National Football League. But, I mean, those are the kind of numbers that you want to see out of a young football team. And at the first few weeks of the season, they struggled. And now with a young football team, you're starting to get at the midway point of the season. Okay, now the defense is playing at a top five level. Okay, now the running game is playing at an elite level over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks. Okay, so those are what you expected. Now the one area that's got to improve upon is that you want your young quarterback to start improving on his play. Now that's hard to do because the first couple games out of the block, he was good. I mean, he was beyond good.
No doubt about that.
You know, so it's kind of hard to get better off of those numbers. So you knew at some point he was going to have some struggles. You just didn't think that the struggles would result in as many pick sixes as they have.
Yeah, the pick sixes are the things that really – you know interceptions are going to come, and they're going to come in his career. Jed Fish has said that too. I mean, interceptions happen now. They happen next year. They happen every year. You just want them to kind of dwindle as it goes along. But the pick sixes are the killers, man.
He needs to minimize them. And he needs to, and he's learning a hard lesson at this level, that windows that you think you can throw in, you've got to learn what window size you can actually throw into.
Sure.
And then you need to learn how certain coverages are and the nuances of those coverages to where you can say, okay, I can make this throw because of this. And that's the growth process with a young quarterback. You know, and each and every week, he faces a different team each and every week. Now, this week, I think, is even
– he faces a different team every week?
Well, I mean, as far as different coverages, you know, as far as the way the style that they play. Because, you know, if you go back and you look at the first
– I'm with you, yeah.
The first couple weeks of the season, okay, Philly, Washington, Indy, San Diego, Pittsburgh, okay, and then Tennessee. Every one of those teams played a 3-4. And so, okay, so now you started to see him possibly maybe get better in some of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then all of a sudden he goes to Pittsburgh, which is a little bit different because it's a different style of 3-4, and they run a lot of different blitz concepts. And then he goes to Miami. It's a different concept once again because Miami plays 3-4, 4-3, and 5-2. Hmm. Now, this week he's even different for him because this is a true 4-3 defense, which is the first true 4-3 defense that he will face. So it's another challenge for him. On top of the talented secondary, it's a different front.
Yeah, just instead of just dealing with the matchups outside, you got to deal with a new setup and everything, for sure. We've kind of wandered off Jaguars' defense. You know, some changes in the Jags' secondary with Alan Ball done for the year with a biceps injury. Will Blackman had surgery on his finger on Tuesday, fractured finger. He's done for an extended period. So sounds like McCray and Grotz are the guys outside. The question, though, is at nickel. And what do you think's going to happen here? I mean, Colvin is in the mix, but not really.
Well,
is
I mean, he's
he?
Got
who to, knows?
You got to open up a roster spot for Aaron Colvin if he's going to end up being active on game day. And I have a hard time believing that a rookie who has had no offseason OTAs, no mini camp, no training camp, that you can have him practice last week in a limited fashion and then this week in a little bit more of a full practice style, that he can be ready in 2 weeks to play in a National Football League game. Now,
that's
look,
true.
Yep. I haven't seen him in practice, and I know Gus was raving about how he's kind of adapting, but that's a lot to ask for a young player that in a two-week time period to be able to grasp all the elements of the NFL speed and the NFL responsibility. So that might be a little bit of a stretch.
If his responsibility is small, though, if it's a certain package for a certain time, is it worth bringing him up? You know, or do you wait until he's fully ready so he can have more to deal with?
I think in a perfect world with Aaron Colvin, you'd like to use all of your allotted time before you bring him up and have him active, which is a three-week period, 21 days or whatever it may be.
There's about half that time left. Yeah,
yeah, so I think maybe by next week, possibly, because not only do you get 21 days, but then you also get the bye week. Okay, so your window is really actually bigger before you play a game, so it's actually 28 days. So I think that would be the more likely scenario. Now, they added a guy this week, Tommy Campbell, who's got some experience. He's in his fourth year. You added a guy last week who's in his first year, Peyton Thompson, that can, you know, has had a week under the system, and so maybe he's going to be a little bit more familiar. But, you know, Gus talked about in the nickel situation that Sherrod Martin is a guy that could play possibly that nickel position. And Sherrod's been around the league for a while.
He has been around.
But he's a safety now. You know, it's not easy to take a safety and put him as a nickel back and expect him to cover maybe a real quick wide receiver. But the Bengals don't have Andrew Hawkins anymore. We saw him a couple weeks ago. They don't have a small, shifty Wes Welker type. So Sherrod Martin could probably handle that. And Cincinnati Bengals have been banged up now. They've got A.J. Green is questionable this week. They already lost Marvin, what was his name? The wide receiver to an ankle surgery. Earlier this year, one of their other top-end wide receivers, so it's not like they're flush with talent.
Yeah, if they had that guy inside, though, in Cincinnati's offense, does that change your strategy here?
Well, I mean, you do what you can do.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind
of
hand-tied.
You're kind of hand-tied with, you know, what you can do personnel-wise. Now, could you do some creative things, maybe, and move a few guys around? I mean, Jeremy Harris is still there. Could you take a Dwayne Grotz, who is a probably better suited to handling a quick, shifty guy, maybe move him to nickel? You could, but how much has he done that, you know, prior to this week? You know, how many repetitions has he had? You know, you don't know that. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Fortunately, if the Bengals can play that game without A.J. Green, you feel a lot better about it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, for the Jaguars at least, A.J. Green has been limited both practice days this week, Wednesday and Thursday, with that toe injury, but could be back for the first time. He's on the field at least.
Well, he's got turf toe. Okay, he's missed the last three games. He missed another game earlier in the year. You're talking about a franchise guy. I mean, hands down, franchise wide receiver. The best wide receiver numbers-wise in the first 3 years of his career in the National Football League. Do you risk possibly exposing a franchise-wide receiver in this game? It's going to be interesting to see how they approach it.
Yeah, from their view, it's week 9. They're 4-2-1. They're in the mix.
And well, they're in the lead in their division.
They're playing a 1-7 team coming in. A lot of football ahead for these Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, and I'm looking at their schedule. They have the Jaguars, and then on a short week, they have the Cleveland Browns.
Big, huge game.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a division game for them.
Yep.
Okay. So do you take a franchise-wide receiver, play him on a Sunday, and then expect him to turn around and maybe play the following week on a Thursday against the Cleveland Browns at home? That's a lot to ask. So if you're going to be a fantasy man, okay, you may not have A.J. Green this week.
I know you are now, too. You're a fantasy football.
Well,
yeah. We're gonna turn you over.
I have a fantasy football advisor.
Who's that, Frangie?
I can't say.
It's a secret one. Linebackers,
but it is not Frank Frangie.
Okay, that's good. The linebackers, it was John Osier had the story today on Jaguars.com that there's some talk about Jeremiah George, who a rookie, came off another team's practice squad. He's been around for a few weeks now, that he could have a little more of a role, maybe even in the middle, and move Thomas back to the auto spot. What do you make of that?
Well, here's what I do know, because there's a lot of what you're talking about I don't know, because you don't get the opportunity to watch a young undrafted rookie, which Jeremiah George is that they got from the New York Jets practice squad. You don't get the opportunity to watch him in practice. So the only thing that I have to base off of is watching him play on game day on film. And now the only reps that he's had on game day on film has been special teams. On special teams, Jeremiah George is an absolute beast.
Really?
An absolute maniac. So
which part of the special teams? Coverage?
Punt coverage. Any coverage.
Name the coverage.
Name the coverage, kickoff coverage, punt coverage. When you watch this guy run down the field, your eyes all of a sudden just pull into this guy that's running down the field at 100 miles an hour and is not slowing down for anything or anybody and is making plays.
Doesn't always start like that, though. Guys get an opportunity on special teams, and they have to take advantage of that. I mean, Roy Reynolds last year was that kind of guy, right?
My experience has always been is that when you have guys that excel on special teams, typically they're going to grow into a role as contributors, as starters. And I go all the way back to 1995, and there was a guy that was on special teams that actually scored the first special teams touchdown in Jaguars history. And it was number 82, Jimmy Smith, who was an exceptional special teams player as a wide receiver. That turned out pretty good. When I was in New York, we had a guy by the name of Victor Green, who was a special teams demon for the New York Jets, turned into not an exceptional, but a very good starting safety for the New York Jets. He got his start on special teams. So I'm not saying that Jeremiah George is going to be a fantastic defensive player. I'm just saying that he's got some attributes that you like to watch and that you want to have in the linebacker position.
It's a good start, at least. And we'll see.
Good start,
if
but we'll
he gets
see.
More time. That's what happens. That's the progression. The JTA's new route optimization initiative will provide reliable service, increase bus frequency, rename routes, and decrease travel time starting December 1st, 2014. For more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. We'll go to the phone lines when we come back. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll look at the injury report as well. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
All right, Logs, here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
When it comes to flavor, go the whole nine yards. Go for Goldfish Crackers. They're tasty, fun treats that come in multiple varieties of deliciousness. So don't drop the ball. Grab the Goldfish. It's the official snack of game day.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
You had one little pause in there that was unnecessary.
It was for effect.
A little weird pause.
It was for effect.
No, it didn't work. The pause
when
didn't
was
quite
the
work.
When was it?
Let me see the script again.
Yeah, go ahead. There you go. It's the one that's
you
not
had a
scratched
slight
out.
Pause, okay.
this is riveting, the dissection of the Goldfish.
Between tasty and fun.
That's all right.
Well, yeah.
Tasty. Well, there's a comma there.
It didn't quite work, right, Joe?
There's a comma.
Yeah.
I don't write them.
I just read them. I mean, you don't need to really the comma. You don't need to pause just because there's a comma.
Yeah, all right. This is Jaguars.
Overall, very strong.
Well, I hope Goldfish is happy. This is Jaguars Thursday J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Buscelli is on assignment with his high school team tonight. I guess Providence is playing this evening.
Yeah, Jeff Kopp, the head coach. Mm-hmm. Tony's a coach. I'm trying to think of the other ex-Jaguar that's on the coaching staff there. Mm-hmm. They've got one other one there. And it's no surprise that Tony coaches a high school football team that I think is averaging over 300 yards rushing a game.
Yeah, there you go. Why even throw it up if you're doing that? Let's go to the phone lines, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Chris in Lakeland tonight talking about focus. Is this the Lakeland down in Central Florida, Chris?
It couldn't be much more central. 300 yards rushing?
Yeah, they're I'm talking like one running back is averaging like almost 300 yards rushing a game for Tony's high school team.
Feed the beast,
well,
baby.
Well, that's the running back. That's not Tony. Come on.
Yeah, but you got to remember now, he's working that offensive line. So as far as he's concerned, trust me, he takes all the credit for it.
I'm kidding. Guys, I'm not in town, so obviously I don't hear all the discussions that are going on different radio stations or in the newspaper. But you remember a couple weeks ago we had what would have been a sack fumble recovery, and everybody stood around. And then this
was Tennessee game.
We saw.
Yep.
And then this past week we saw everybody react instead. And I'm wondering about the pick sixes, because we know a young quarterback's going to throw some interceptions. Has there been some local evidence of urgency? You know, hey, our guy's going to maybe do this now and then. Maybe that person needs to be tackled. Are you seeing something? Is there discussion about what other people can be doing instead of pulling off after they finish their block or whatever? Is tackling from the offensive players being emphasized?
Yeah, it's a great question you bring up.
Thanks for the call.
And what you're talking about is that once the ball has left the hands of the quarterback, you know, why aren't guys aware that a pick six is going on? And why isn't the tackle being made? To talk about the two specific interceptions this past week, the one that was returned like 81 yards. When you're talking about offensive linemen making tackles, they don't run so fast, okay? And the wide receivers are typically down the field. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times their attention is not even on the interception. Like the second one, they had absolutely no opportunity. Nobody did to make a tackle.
It's like 20 yards.
The first one, that was like 80-something yards returned. The only one that really had an opportunity to make a tackle on that play was Blake Bortles. And there was a very large defensive end that had his hands on his chest, and that was it. And look, it's the same reason as to why when you have a field goal that's a long field goal attempt, you always have one guy back deep in the end zone. So if the field goal try falls short, that person can catch it and then return it possibly for a touchdown. Now, I hate to bring up bad memories to J.P. Shadrick.
A lot.
But Alabama had that happen to them, and I think it was against Auburn. Am I right on that?
You're right. Okay. But it makes sense because they can outrun everybody on the field. Right?
That's why they don't have offensive linemen on punt coverage and kickoff coverage, and they have them only on field goal protection and then sometimes on kickoff return. You don't want to put an offensive lineman in a position where he has to make a tackle. You know, now – going back, just a little flashback from the past.
Okay, we like these.
When there was an interception here in Jacksonville, there was nobody funner to watch than Maurice Jones-Drew. Maurice had flashbacks of his days at De La Salle High School in California when he was a safety. And he'll be the first one to tell you that he was a great safety. And I believe it, because all you have to do is watch Maurice when he blocked. Remember the time that he hit Sean Merriman in the chest at the goal line? And then you watched Maurice Jones-Drew when there was a fumble recovery and the guy was picking it up and running, or there was an interception. The guy was an absolute missile and was very good at it. Now, unfortunately, offensive linemen aren't in that category, and things like that do happen. That's why the wide receiver that is in the area of the interception, he has to have – and he brings up a good point in that – the receivers in the area have to have an awareness that if that ball is intercepted, they are really the best chance of that ball getting tackled or that interceptor being tackled, because you're talking about offensive linemen on the field. Now, Luke Bowenko gave a great effort on the 80-something yarder. But, you know, just...
Yeah, they're preoccupied with their own jobs at that point. The ball's in the air. You don't know. It happens that fast. You sometimes just can't get over there. That's the way
it works. Better way to prevent any of that from happening is just don't throw the interception.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Let's try that.
That would work much better than teaching offensive linemen how to pursue and tackle.
Well, let's... The other side of this, defensively, when there's an interception... Everybody else blocks for the guy who's coming back, right?
Yeah, and the rules have changed a lot, you know, with that. I mean, back...
You can only block a certain angle, though, now,
well,
right?
Yeah. You're not allowed to block. I mean, on an interception, they have now defenseless player rules and that you can't headhunt, which, you know, going back, I mean, you used to be able to do that.
Were you a headhunter?
I had a few.
Okay.
I actually got a letter from the league office one time when Warren Moon threw an interception. And he was just standing there watching the return, and I circled around on him, and he was not even making an effort to go to make the tackle, and I decked him.
And he certainly wasn't after that, apparently.
And then he got up on one knee, and then I decked him again. And I got a letter from the league office. In fact, Warren Moon, who is now the color analyst for the Seahawks, broadcast on radio, I joke around with him to this day about that play because, trust me, he remembered that one.
Wow.
I got him pretty good.
What was the letter? What was included in the letter?
It basically said that if you do anything like that again, expect a very large chunk of money being missing from your paycheck. Yeah. But that was before, you know, they made all these rules about protecting quarterbacks and defensive players.
So it must
on
have been
returns.
Bad then. Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
You're a rough dude, Jeff.
Oh, that was part of the game. I mean, that's, you know, we were taught that. I mean, when there was an interception, you would have four defensive linemen making a beeline to the quarterback because that's the way you were taught. I mean, take a shot. It was like, okay, now we get to hit their quarterback.
Hey, it's free time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Might as well.
It's the way it is.
Jaguars Thursday rolls along. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman from the HenneyAutos.com studio. Go along in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford. Go further. Final segment, final chance for your calls tonight. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll look around the National Football League tonight, too. Big game in the NFC South tonight. We'll preview that one coming up in a moment. Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Republic Services, the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida, the official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli out tonight. Final segment of Jaguars Thursday. Got to remind you that the registration for Junior Roar is now open. Girls 6 to 17 years old. Pre-game show is November 30th before the Jags-Giants game here at Everbank Field and includes a three-day clinic before the game taught by members of the Roar. Visit the Roar page on Jaguars.com to register your daughter or call 904-633-4671. That's coming up soon. Jeff, let's look at the injury report today for the Jaguars. It was a veteran day for Chris Clemens, Geno Hayes, and Roy Miller. Will Blackman, of course, didn't practice with a finger. Branch is done for at least five more weeks with a groin, if not longer than that. Who knows with the groin injury. Dakota Watson limited today with a hamstring issue. Luke Jokel, as we mentioned earlier, back on the field today in a non-contact role. He should work full tomorrow, and we'll see how he does after the concussion this past game after tomorrow. But that's positive. He's moving ahead and on the field at least today. Aaron Colvin limited again with the knee injury. Dwayne Grotz limited with the groin. Mercedes Lewis, of course, is out another couple of weeks, but practicing. He's eligible to come back for the Colts game after the bye week. That's, what, 3 weeks away now, I guess. Alan Hearns full today after a limited day yesterday with an ankle, and Cecil Shorts, the third, has been full all week, but is on the report with a groin issue. That's the latest.
Yeah,
what stands out the most about all of those to you?
Well, first of all, Grotz, was he? Did you say Dwayne Grotz?
It says Grotz.
Full?
Yes, limited.
Limited. That's probably the one of most concern because, you know, going to that game last week, you know, he was questionable.
Yeah, and it was a hip flexor last week.
Yeah, and I think it's maybe all related.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking about a position that is seriously banged up. Alan Ball, Will Blackman, both of those guys being out. That's the one that probably concerns me more than anything. Dakota Watson is on there. And, you know, you talked about Jeremiah George and John Osher's story on Jaguars.com.
Yeah.
In this past game, you know, Dakota Watson got a lot of snaps at that auto position. Are they thinking, you know, was the production not what they wanted or expected out of Dakota Watson to where maybe now they're looking at getting JT back at auto and then Jeremiah George some snaps at Mike? I think one thing is for certain, JT Thomas, once he's on the field, he's going to stay on the field, whether he's playing Mike in base downs or in nickel situations. He would be the Mike. I don't think that Jeremiah George would be a candidate to be the Mike position when they go to their nickel package.
Okay.
So I think that maybe when they go to their base package, they could move JT to auto and then have Jeremiah George playing the Mike position because they didn't get a ton of production out of Dakota Watson mm-hmm. last week, and they didn't get a lot of production out of him earlier in the season. So that may be some of the thinking there. Cecil Shorts, he had the excuse me. He kind of came off the field last week, you know, was limping a little bit, but then all of a sudden he came right back out and he was fine. You're always concerned about a wide receiver with a soft tissue injury just because, you know, it's been going on with Cecil for a while.
Yeah, especially him, no doubt.
You know, so one thing that I think that he's got to take a look at, you know, whether he's playing here next year or wherever he's playing at, of trying to find a better off-season workout regime to help alleviate some of those soft tissue injuries that he's been having.
I think that has a lot to do with it. He rarely takes time away. I mean, he's going to Minnesota with Fitzgerald's
camp. Yeah,
and
I want people to understand because, you know, when I talk about changing his offseason routine, Cecil Shorts is one of the hardest working wide receivers that there is. I mean, this guy has an incredible work ethic. But maybe he needs to take a look at it to where he changes it up, with if that includes more time off, or changing the way that it's configured, whatever it may be, he needs to take a good hard look at it.
But to his defense here, he's been full both days this week. So
yeah,
that's,
no, you know,
nothing,
and I'm not trying to criticize him. I mean, that's obviously something for him to look at in the future.
And I'm sure he has considered that moving
forward. Alan Hearns, you know, came off the field limping a little bit, was back out on the field, you know, appeared to be fine, so I think he's going to be all right.
And that's good news with Mercedes Lewis moving
along. I think he could be back before he would actually be allowed to return. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, with Mercedes, he had that high ankle sprain. That's kind of why they put him on that designated injured reserve to return.
I think you have to stay a certain amount of time. I think that's
you do.
Why. Yeah.
You have to. Yeah. You know, once you put him on that, you do not get the luxury of pulling them off of that. And I think the league needs to take a look at maybe changing some of the rules with that, because, you know, you're only allowed one guy to have one guy put on this injured list to return, and then there's a minimum amount of time that he has to spend on that. You know, my whole thinking is that there's some players that get put on injured reserve because it's maybe a week or two longer than that. And there are some guys that get put on injured reserve because they say, well, he's not that good of a player to where we would think of using that designation on him.
Let's just put him on there the whole year. Right?
You know, if the league is trying to get the best product that they possibly can out on the field, why wouldn't you be a little bit more liberal with these rules as far as designating players to return but not having them counting on the roster? So, in other words, expanding this designation thing and making the window more flexible.
How many are you talking about, more players on it or a different amount of weeks that one player can
I think
come
both.
Back?
I think you
change. Three players?
I think three players, and then you have, you know, let's say you can use one can be a 3 week, another one can be a 5 week, and another one can be a 7 week, and then you can also use, if you don't use the seven or the five, they could become threes. You know, now I know that a lot of the general managers of the National Football League want to have something that's steady because they don't want to have teams with the ability to stash players on their roster.
Might be the scare.
But at the same time, isn't it allowing teams to get the best possible product and then in turn the viewers of the National Football League to allow them to watch the best possible players out there on the field each and every week? I wish they would tweak that just a little bit.
We'll see what happens. When's the next CBA anyway? that would be when that would change, I guess.
That's a great question.
It's a little while.
Great question.
Let's look around the National Football League in Week 9. It starts tonight. The New Orleans Saints are in Charlotte, North Carolina to take on the Carolina Panthers. Saints 3-4. Big win last week. Panthers 3-4-1. Who do you like?
I think this is a great matchup. I think this is a pick'em game. Drew Brees and that New Orleans Saints football team just haven't been able to find the level of play that I think that they expected out of them. The Carolina Panthers, I think, are playing pretty well considering all the losses that they have had on their football team. So it's going to be a great game. I think this is going to be one of the best Thursday night matchups that we've seen yet.
And they've had some dog games on Thursday night.
This is a division foe. These are division foes.
No doubt.
Division games are always more competitive than, I think, than non-division games.
This could be the game of the week in the NFL. Cardinals at the Cowboys. Cardinals 6-1. Cowboys somehow lost on Monday night to the Redskins. They're 6-2, and we'll see what Romo's deal is this week.
Yeah, took a pretty good shot to the back. Bruce Arians.
By the way, what do you make of all that? The whole Jerry Jones on the sideline thing. How about that, huh?
Hey, look, he's the owner of the football team. He can do whatever he wants.
That's
you true. Know, when you pay, when you write the checks, you can do whatever you want. But I will want to say this about Bruce Arians.
Yes.
He needs to be the NFL Coach of the Year for what he's done since he's gotten there in Arizona. First of all, you go all the way back to what he was able to do in Indianapolis as the replacement coach for Chuck Pagano when he was dealing with his health issues, the job that he did there, and then the job that he did last year in Arizona with a roster that I don't think is overly talented, but him and Steve Keim, the general manager, have done a masterful job in Arizona. They really changed the culture and have gotten a team that has had a lot of issues at quarterback now, got them to play at a very high level.
Another good game in Houston this week. The Texans at 4-4. Welcome in the Philadelphia Eagles, 5-2.
Yeah, the Eagles are getting a little bit more healthy. Mm-hmm. I think they're expected to maybe get a return of one of their offensive linemen. And, boy, at just the right time with J.J. Watt still playing at an extremely high level.
Is Clowney back this
Clowney's
week?
Back.
Yeah.
He played last week. I think that's a really, really strong matchup. The question in that game is can the Houston Texans score enough points to keep up with the Philadelphia Eagles? Although the Eagles, their offense is not functioning at anywhere the level that they were last year. Their quarterback is not playing at that high of a level. But, I mean, how many quarterbacks can repeat that kind of performance? I mean, the year he had last year, Nick Foles, was unbelievable.
No doubt about that. You know, I mentioned that it could have been the game of the week, the Cowboys-Cardinals game. I forgot about the Broncos and the Patriots. 4:25 kick on Sunday. Broncos are in New England.
That's the marquee matchup of the week.
No
and, and the reason why is the quarterbacks. Peyton Manning and
Tom Brady.
I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. You know, and I'm, when it comes to that matchup, I mean, you really have to cherish these moments. You know, because we're talking about two of the greatest players in NFL history. And they're both getting old, but they're still playing at a pretty doggone good level.
Very high level.
But you know that that's not going to last forever. I mean, to me, that's must-see TV is that matchup.
And Tom Brady, you know.
When is that game? Is that a Sunday night game?
4:25 CBS game.
Okay.
The second part of the day on CBS. You know, it's funny how Brady turned it on after that Chiefs loss. They were calling for, you know, some media folks started to rumble. You're going to evaluate the quarterback position, and
it's amazing
Belichick's
old
reaction.
I mean, it's amazing how that works. I mean, just because of the quarterback's age, when he has a bad game, all of a sudden they immediately turn to, is he done? When the conversation should have been, why can't it be, what can he do to play better, and what can they do to play better around him? It's
right.
It's an age bias.
That's what it is.
Well, in some cases, it's warranted. But at the quarterback position, it's hard to jump the gun. I know the guy that used to sit in that seat right there used to be one of the best at it.
Uh-huh.
Dick Ketchman. When a guy got to be, you know, 27 years old, he was over the hill and done.
Hey, we're going to
say that in good fun.
It sounds like it. Hey, we'll see you in Cincinnati. They're letting us out of the cage this week, Loggy.
Yeah, you're going to be there, JP.
I'll be in Cincinnati.
Looking forward to it.
We'll talk to you Sunday at 10 o'clock for the Publix Tailgate Show from Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, Ohio. For Joe Fortunato, Jeff Lagerman, JP Shadrick saying goodnight. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.